Money, Riches, and Wealth is sponsored by the Financial Consulate. This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
And this is Drew Tignanelli, Money, Riches, and Wealth, here with Tom Bonvasuto.
Good evening, Drew. How are you doing?
How do you say that in Italian? You always say it in such a classy way.
Tommaso Vincenzo Giuseppe Bonvasuto.
There you go. I like that. I like that a lot, you know? It sounds pretty cool. Anyway, we're here on an open show, and that means that our guests are, our listeners are our guests.
That's right.
So, last week we had Stephen Moore on for a shorter period of time than what we had expected, but still the topic was fascinating. Wealth estates, and you ought to read the book if you want to see the statistics, carte blanche. Right out there, you know, look, if you're taxing, you're living in a state that's taxing the living heck out of everyone, that state is doomed for economic deterioration over time. It doesn't happen overnight. There's all kinds of things that can influence a state, and the state of Maryland, obviously, one of the things that's been influencing them is the increase in the federal budget all the time. So you have more and more and more and more and more and more federal spending. They've never decreased the overall amount of federal spending, and as long as that continues to happen, I guess Maryland can continue to eke out gains. But they should be an incredibly prosperous state, but they're not. They're not an incredibly prosperous state because they're so reliant on government, and they've driven so many people out of this state. And the statistics in his book are overwhelming, and he specifically points out Maryland as one of the states that's in trouble, along with New Jersey and New York and California. And Connecticut are the, you know, four or five of the states that he points out in the book as a dangerous situation that they're long-term playing with.
Yeah, the growth of the federal government has really insulated the state of Maryland much over the years. But as we see the federal government paring back, it's going to have an impact on the state here. And if you look at some of the charts of where retirees are saying they want to get out of, Maryland is one of the ones that's black on the chart of the highest numbers of retirees that want to move out of the state. And that has a lot to do with the tax structure and some of the other policies going on in the state.
Yeah. And they think that they've rectified it because they've moved the estate tax up to $5 million in 2019. Well, first off, you know, I mean, that's 5 years that somebody has to wait until that happens.
Right.
And that's not the only tax that people are concerned about also. There are other things that they, lower property taxes in Delaware, lower sales taxes in Delaware, lower income taxes in all kinds of states down the East Coast. Anyway, we've talked about it over and over. I guess we ought to stop talking about it and talk about something different. We're on an open show.
That's right.
Our listeners are our guests. 410-922-6680. They can call and ask any question they want, whatever the topic might be.
Social Security or retirement, 401ks.
We'll do the one that we just answered a little while ago for a client of ours. So he's part of a corporation, and he has employees, and his employees are paying for they have a prescription plan and they have medical insurance, but when they're over 65 years of age, they have to be able to prove that the plan that they're on is a credible plan. And if it's not a credible plan and they stay on that and they don't go to Medicare D, if the prescription plan isn't a credible plan, or Medicare B, if the plan is not a medical insurance credible plan, then they're going to pay a 1% penalty for every month that they don't sign up for Medicare D and Medicare B. When they ultimately leave that company, let's say at 68 years of age, 3 years after they turn 65, they're going to have a 36% penalty on the premium that they normally would pay. Whereas Medicare Part B, it's about $110 a month, so they're going to pay $36 to $38 a month more in a penalty if they wait to get onto Medicare Part B. You know, this is something that a lot of employees have to be very careful about when they turn 65. They have to understand, is the medical plan I'm on, both Medicare B and Medicare D, portions of their medical plan, credible such that when I leave the company and I no longer have that medical insurance, I'm not going to get hit with this quote-unquote penalty.
Yeah, so, that's a bigger issue now because we're seeing people having to work longer. So okay. you didn't have people that were working past 65, but now there's a much larger part of the population that's working past 65. And so now this is an issue for corporate HR areas, benefits people to start to have to look at how they structure the plan, and the individuals need to know as well.
That's true. So we do have one call online. We're on an open show, 410-922-6680. If you want to call in early in the show, is the best time to call in because you get the most time. We're going to go to Steve. I'm ready to touch the computer screen like that's going to do something for me.
It's going to open them up.
I've got an iPad in front of me, and I'm, you know, anyway, let's go to the telephone here. Steve, how can we help you?
I got some money in a non-traded REIT.
Okay.
And invest in New York real estate, whatever. Now, I got a mailing recently from them. It said that they are willing to buy back my shares, which I bought at $10 a share, as they usually are, and they're willing to buy them back at 93% of the current value, which they are valuing at $11.50, something like that.
How much? $11.50?
Yeah, so 93% of it. It came out there, you know, you can do the math. It's about $10.50, very roughly.
Okay.
So the question I had was, and it said if you buy it, you can sell them now, or if you want to, 3 months, you can sell them then. They're going to have like a quarterly buyback.
Okay.
And the question I had was, is that common for non-traded REITs to do that? And why do they do that if they do? What am I missing in this process?
Okay, so it is common for them to have a buyback, all right. How long you been in it?
Less than a year. I don't recall because I have a couple of them. But anyway, less than a year.
Less than a year. So it's very uncommon that they would actually be talking about a price that's higher than the $10 that you originally paid for it. Matter of fact, I think you're the only one I've ever met in my entire 35-year career that I've ever heard somebody actually offering to buy it for more than what you paid for it. Normally, when they do these buyouts, they're offering to buy them back for a lot less than what they're actually worth. So they're, in my opinion, in this one, if the numbers you're throwing at me are correct, okay, I would be very tentative to want to sell because these guys are no dummies. They normally don't make an offer for anything less than, you know, a good 10, 15, 20% less than what I've seen these things trade at. Is this by any chance in an IRA?
In my particular, this is part of an IRA. Yeah, this
okay.
For me.
Now, keep in mind, you have an issue. You have an issue that you got to be careful about with a non-traded REIT inside of an IRA. You need to make sure that that REIT has the ability to be valued on a regular basis when you turn 70 and a half. Now, you don't sound like you're anywhere close to 70 and a half. So I'm assuming you're not.
That's true.
Okay, so that's not an issue for you, but people out there that are listening who have non-traded REITs, they better make sure there's a very good way to value that asset in your REIT to make sure that your RMD is correct, because the IRS is on the warpath of what they call hard-to-value assets, which non-traded REITs would be classified in that category. So I've never liked non-traded REITs. But I'm pleased to hear that yours seems to be, based on the numbers you've thrown out, is doing well.
Well, the buyback that's being offered, I agree, it's unusual at a higher, it's being offered by the company that issued it itself. Now, commonly when these things drop out in value, it's some third party that wants to come in and
they want to
a share, right?
Yeah, they call them vulture investors. Mm-hmm. They're coming in and saying, "I'll buy it for 40% of what you what it's probably worth right now because I think I can make money at that kind of a discount." So your company, but it is common that in non-traded REITs there will be some kind of buyout provision every so often in the in the REIT, but normally the value that they're offering is also at a fairly substantial discount.
And part of it's to give an opportunity for liquidity.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, because then that's part of their way of trying to encourage people to realize that you're not stuck in it forever.
Right.
So,
right.
All right, Steve, I hope that's helpful to you.
Well, thanks very much. So you would think, don't just cash it out quick and take it.
What I would do is try to get a better appraisal of how this REIT went from $10 to 11.5 in 1 year. What is it about it that made it do that kind of appreciation? And then assess it from there. But, you know, normally they're not going to offer more money for something. I mean, you're talking about a 5% rate of return, and you might have gotten some income between now and then. There's got to be something going on. They know why they're going to make money buying it from you at 10.5, okay? I got to run.
Thank you.
Take care. Anyway, Maggie Hunter in traffic. We'll be right back with Tom in Towson. Take it away, Maggie.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And this is Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're back. We're on an open show today, 410-922-6680. If you want to call in, you get to be our guest tonight, 410-922-6680. Call in and ask anything you want. Jeff called in off the air and said that if you buy your REIT early, you're going to get a discount versus those who buy in late. And, so therefore, if you buy in early, you're going to get rewarded, and those who buy in late will have to pay a higher price for the REIT. I do not know what he's saying is true. I've never seen that, and it would be contrary to what you would think, because if that were true, then you know everybody would want to buy in early.
Everybody
and get the discount. I guess he's, you know, maybe he knows something. I have a bias against those non-traded REITs. I have tended to find them to be very difficult investments to make money on. They tend to make more money for the people who put them together and the people who sell them than the people who buy them. That's
right.
My own opinion. And I guess I'm going to stick with it, Tom.
Until you hear otherwise.
Anyway, if you want to call in 410-922-6680, Tom in Towson, how can we help you?
Okay. My IRA is composed of about 10 individual stocks, good blue chip dividend paying stocks. I want to take a defensive measure to guard against a correction in the market. It was suggested that I purchase an inverse ETF that is inverse to the S&P 500 by one. What is your opinion on using this as a defensive measure?
Well, I mean, let's think about it. Let's say you buy let's just assume that it does what it says it does. Okay, so the market goes down 10%, an inverse ETF is going to go down 10%. And then there are other ETFs that are double, triple bear ETFs, which will, they say if the market goes down 10%, the double one will go down 20%.
Up
20%.
Yeah.
Sorry. That'd be a really bad investment.
That wouldn't work.
But,
didn't work.
But we're getting to that point. Anyway, or the triple bear, which would go up 30% if the S&P 500 went down 10%. So that's what's called an inverse fund. So let's start with just the regular inverse fund. So it's equal to the S&P 500. So you've got a portfolio, let's say, of $100,000 worth of stock.
Yeah.
And you buy $10,000 worth of S&P 500 inverse funds. Okay. So if the market goes down 10% and you just have a regular inverse S&P 500, you've got 10% of your money in it. It goes down 10%. It goes up 10%. You made 1%. Right?
Right.
And your $100,000 now went down $10,000, 10%, so you're still down 9%. That doesn't sound like it's a great deal, and you really better make sure you're betting on the right side of that coin, because here's the problem with those inverse funds. Those inverse funds are usually based on some kinds of derivative contracts, and there are all kinds of quirky ways that they value them. Matter of fact, I'll tell you this story, Tom. Back in 2008, there were people who bought inverse funds that the underlying index went down 30%. They had double, triple, inverse indexes, and they lost 10% on their money. And you say, they were supposed to make 60 or 70%. How did that happen? I haven't figured that out myself, but I just know that it is a reality that it did, and they explain it because of the weird nature of how these inverse funds are created and how they work in their derivative nature. We've actually eliminated use of all of these ETFs that have any derivative components in them, because we find that they just haven't worked for us. For example, we owned a short interest. If the interest rates on short U.S. Treasuries went up, this fund would go up. And so what happened is interest rates went down about 5 basis points, and our fund dropped by about 15%, which it shouldn't have never done. It should have only dropped by a few percent, like 3 or 4%. It dropped by 15%. They turned, and the interest rate went all the way up about 15 basis points more than when we bought it, and we only made 5% on the darn thing.
Yeah.
We had the same thing with double inverse oil. I mean, not inverse. We had a double bull oil ETF after the 2008 downturn. So oil dropped from $150 a barrel all the way down to 40. And we said, this is ridiculous. We're going to buy a double bull on this. It's like the easiest bet we've ever made. So we bought a double bull oil bet at $40 a barrel. Oil went up to $52 a barrel, and we were still only up by about 5 or 6%. I mean, I'm sick and tired of these things. If I were you, if I were going to try to protect my portfolio, I would understand how the option market works, and I would look at buying a put option if I could find one reasonably priced that takes me out to a long enough period of time, and I would consider the leverage of what an option, a put option, will give you, and, you know, knowing that if I'm wrong, I could lose easily 50% of my money, but, you know, I may only have to put in 2% of my money to protect something like 60 or 70% of my portfolio.
What does a put mean? Does it mean that...
It means this. It means that I go in and I'm betting that the market's going down. And I say to an investor, I'm going to put the S&P 500 at 1,800, right? The S&P 500 to 2,000. I expect a 20% correction. That means I expect the S&P 500 to go down to 1,600. That means that I could potentially make 200 point profit, because I'm betting that it's going to drop below 1800 and go all the way down to 1600. If I only have to pay, let's say, 20 for that put option, then I could potentially make 180 point profit on a $20 investment. That's a sixfold increase, and I could protect a lot larger portion of my portfolio.
Would you buy the put on the each individual stock?
No. I buy it on the S&P 500. Or I could find an individual stock that has a very close beta coefficient to the S&P 500, such as, pick an S&P 500 stock that has a 1 beta coefficient. I may be getting too technical here, Tom.
Well, something like an Exxon or something like that, right? Yeah.
Well, explain what it means. I don't have all day, Noah.
Well, I mean, Tom, I would be careful, though. I mean, if you've got 10 stocks in your portfolio,
Colgate, Palmolive.
Yeah, but, they're not going to be necessarily exactly correlated with the S&P. I mean, one of the things I've seen people make mistakes on here is that they're buying insurance. They think they're buying insurance, as Drew was pointing out. You think you're doing something, and there's a lot of vehicles out there that are not behaving the way they're supposed to in the crisis that you want them to. So that's one of the problems that came out of 2008. And other periods of time. But you're also assuming that your portfolio is going to match up with the S&P. So your portfolio could go down, the S&P could go up, and you could actually, even if the vehicle did what you wanted it to.
So would it be more expensive to buy a put on each individual stock?
It would probably. Be, because they're probably not going to be as liquid as something like an S&P.
It'll also cost them a commission each and every stock that he has to buy.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you don't understand the concepts well enough, you have to educate yourself. Don't trust that you can find a broker that's going to necessarily explain this all to you.
Right.
I'm not saying they're not out there.
Right.
There are.
Mm-hmm.
But,
mm-hmm.
you know, the option market, nothing can lose money faster than not understanding how the option market works.
Yeah, you got to be careful with it and make sure you're insuring the right things when you're doing it. And
like Tom's saying, maybe you're overthinking the situation right now, you know? So, you know, that's always a possibility. But, you know, I wish I could go into all of it, Tom. It's a fascinating topic you're talking about. But it's a complicated one.
Yep, and there's a lot more to the picture. You know, it's your IRA. It's a whole bunch of things in terms of the long term. Cash is defensive. There's other things you can do.
All right, Tom.
Thank you.
All right, buddy. Take care. Noah, we got to get traffic report. So we're run over here, but we ought to go to Maggie Hunter and see what's happening out there on the roads. Take it away, Maggie.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And we're back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're on an open show with Thomas Vincenzo Giuseppe Bonvissuto. Did I say that right?
That was pretty good. That was pretty good.
No, you say it.
Tommaso Vincenzo Giuseppe Bonvissuto.
Tommaso. That's what I forgot, right? Tommaso Vincenzo Giuseppe Bonvissuto.
That's right. We share our same middle name, you know.
Yes, Vincenzo. That's my middle name. Andrew Vincenzo Gerald Tignanelli. See, I throw a lot. Is your name actually Tommaso?
Not on my birth certificate, no.
And is it Vincenzo
or
Vincent?
No, the only thing that's on my birth certificate.
So your name is really Thomas Vincent
Bonvissuto.
How about
Joseph? Giuseppe is Joseph. That was my confirmation name, as we used to.
Was it Joseph or Giuseppe?
Joseph. It was Joseph.
So you're really an English guy pretending to be Italian.
Yeah, and if you saw me, I'm pretty pale.
I wouldn't say you're all that pale. You got a nice little olive thing going. I got more, but you,
yes, you do.
Because I'm 100%. You're only 50.
That's right.
Is it 50?
That's 50.
And the other side's fighting with you because
it's
Irish.
And German. That's right.
Anyway, we're here on an open show, 410-922-6680. There is nobody online. Not a single caller at this moment. So if you want to get in and ask your question, you have plenty of opportunity. 410-922-6680. But I do have a question off air. And John says, if you retire overseas but retain your U.S. citizenship, can you still collect your Social Security? And the answer is, of course, absolutely. I'm not even sure that if you drop your citizenship, you would lose your Social Security if you paid into the system and you're qualified for it. I'm fairly confident that that would not negate you from Social Security. But if you're definitely a U.S. citizen,
mm-hmm.
And you're approved for Social Security, you could live in Timbuktu, as they said. My parents used to say that all
yep,
the time.
Timbuktu.
Did you ever figure out where Timbuktu is?
You have to look on the map.
I guess. So the answer to that is absolutely,
yes.
You can collect. And matter of fact, that's the number one growing trend of retirees is moving out of the country,
mm-hmm. right.
retaining their U.S. citizenship, but living in an emerging market. And matter of fact, we had a guest on here
mm-hmm.
about 6-7 months ago. Her name was Kathleen Petticoor. And Petticoor, and her website is livinginvestingoverseas.com,
right.
mm-hmm. and that's her specialty. Her specialty is helping people who want to live overseas, and she gives them advice as to what cities, what countries, what things. They'll even consult with you if you want to hire them. They have a team of consultants that will help you, you know the things you got to do. And, you know, the problem with living overseas is that there's a lot of little nuances you have to learn.
Right.
You have to understand how your medical insurance, you know, Medicare doesn't cover a nickel of expenses overseas. Right. And I believe Medigap insurance would also be negated if you're going to live an extended period of time overseas. Mm-hmm. Usually, I think Medigap Plan F, which is what we usually recommend, I believe is only for travel overseas, not for if you're planning to extend and live overseas. So you might need a separate foreign travel medical policy.
Depending on what their insurance structure is over there.
Depending on, well, you don't, healthcare, you know, you want an at least to be evacuated back to the States if you, if you, you know, had any kind of medical emergency and so forth.
Right.
So that's just one of many issues you want to, you need to, you know, you're not going to be able to easily go into a local bank as an American citizen and set up a checking account or a savings account with a Costa Rican bank or in a Panamanian bank. They're most institutions overseas are leery about having Americans set up accounts with them because the IRS and the federal government has come down on them so hard that they you know, that they're they know that it's going to come with a lot of extra burden to their administration to bring an American citizen account on. So a lot of times what you have to do is you have to go and set up a company in those countries, and then you have to, you know, go back to the bank and set up it as a local company that's been incorporated by an American. Now, that's a different story. They don't seem to worry about that as much.
Yeah.
But then, you know, that brings other issues into the equation. So, anyway, it's quite fascinating. We're on an open show, 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680, if you want to call in. Again, there's nobody online. If you want to call, this is a great time to get your question answered. And Noah answered our question. Timbuktu is a city in the country of Mali in West Africa.
There you go.
Yeah, you didn't know that, did you?
No, I'm not a...
Now you have that kind of information.
Yep, I'll have to draw it on the map I have.
So, you know, everyone's made a big deal, Tom, out of the stock market. The S&P 500 closed at a milestone record, 2,000.
Yep.
2,000.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what I like to say is, yeah, that is true, but you realize that it closed at 1550 in 2000, in the year 2000.
Right.
That was 14 years ago. So that means it's up a whole 450 points in
14 years.
In 14 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's a relatively small rate of return from that peak to today. I think it works out to about 4%, 3.5%,
something like that. On an annualized basis.
On an annualized basis.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you've got to, we got to put things in perspective, and you should never get caught into the euphoria of a market, you know?
Right. So, these milestones definitely get the news. It sells newspapers or get you to click on ads and look at websites, you know?
Yeah, so. Absolutely. And but we have Dave in Forest Hill, who called to answer our plea for people to call in. Dave in Forest Hill, how can we help you?
Sure. Hey, guys. How you doing?
I'm just doing good.
Question, then I'm going to bounce off real
quick. Okay, you go ahead.
So I'm at 53, have about $700,000 in retirement IRAs, the 403s, the rollovers. I believe it's going to course correct sooner or later. How do we protect that? So should we still be feeding these retirement funds, or should we start throwing things in cash and waiting for the course correction? So I'm going to jump off. Thanks, guys.
All right. Good question. You should never stop contributing to your 401k plan.
Right,
you know,
right.
You should never stop contributing to your 401k plan. And so somebody like 53 years old, you know, with the market going up and up and you're getting concerned, you know, you shouldn't have 100% of your money in the market anymore. You should probably pull back some. And you pull back to the extent that you're concerned about. You know, do you think it's just a normal correction? Then maybe you pull back 10, 15%. If you think that there's something worse out there, then maybe you have to pull back 25 or 30%. 35%. But, you know, I don't necessarily know he needs to go too much further than that unless he really feels that he has good information as to why he thinks that the market is in serious trouble.
Right.
And there's
yeah.
three big things that you always think about. Is the country in sovereign crises like Greece was?
Mm-hmm.
That's a slam dunk 70% drop in your stock market. Okay. Is there an inversion of the yield curve ready to happen for some reason? And that's a sure bet 25 to 50% correction. Or is your banking system in trouble that it could potentially collapse like the U.S. has had in 2008, which was a 50 to 60% correction during that period of time. So sovereign crises, inverted yield curves, and banking crises are the biggies that you have to be worried about. Otherwise, the market goes through normal corrections, 10, 20, 25% at the most. And usually it's based on overvaluations. People realize companies can't make this profit forever. They back out of the market for a while, waiting until the economy picks up steam again. It could take 6 months, 2 years, something of that sort, until all of a sudden investors want to come back in again and start buying. So,
yeah, I mean, I think, you know, some of the things that, you know, Dave needs to think about, too, is, you know, how did he react in 2008? He, you know, if he's got 700,000 in retirement savings, he didn't just start. So how did he react in 2008? And did he ride it through and recover back with it? And there's no guarantee we're going to get as quick a turnaround. I mean, it may not seem quick to some people, but 2008 to 2014, I mean, we've had a great run in the market here. But, you know, what, you know, kind of emotional reactions did he have during that time? Because you can get, you know, as we were talking about in the office, was 1966 to 1982. It took that long for the Dow to get back to a 1,000. Do you have 16 years to ride that out? But I agree. Continue to contribute, continue to, you know, get matching and all of those kinds of things to get those benefits in the plan. And then you have to look at the bigger picture. You can't look at retirement assets in a vacuum. You need to look at the whole balance sheet and really see, you know, the whole picture of what else is out there, Social Security and other things.
And we have to go to Mark Thibodeau and weather. We're going to come right back. I hope that was helpful to our friend. And we'll be right back. Money, Riches, and Wealth.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And this is Money, Riches, and Wealth. It's Drew Tignanelli. We're here at the last few minutes of our show. We're on an open show, 410-922-6680. There's still two or three lines open. I've got Dave in Baltimore. Dave, how can we help you?
Yeah, Lou, I have a question. I was going to give a gift to my grandnephew, U.S. savings bonds.
Okay.
They say now you can no longer buy them at the commercial bank. You have to go online.
Yeah, I believe that's right. They strictly...
I didn't know that, you know.
I think they do them at treasurydirect.gov, and they strictly do electronic registration nowadays. They don't do paper bonds anymore. But it's actually a good system. I think you'll find that it's relatively easy.
Treasury,
US Treasury Direct.gov. Treasury.gov, I believe.
Yeah, can just Google search buy US.
If I want to give it as a gift, what is the procedure then? If it's a gift.
Well,
you may be able to print off like a gift
receipt
or something like that.
Or something, or they'll send a notice if you want them to, et cetera.
But it's great because, you know, a lot of bonds have gotten lost over the years and people can't find them. So, and it's a great way to keep them registered and they keep track of what the value is.
Absolutely.
Do I have to know his Social Security number?
No. You usually don't have to know their Social Security. It's your Social Security number will go in on it, but when he cashes it out, his Social Security will be asked for, and that's when he'll pay the tax on the difference.
They still have a double E?
Yeah, they still have the double E, and you also have the I bond, but I think they're a little more expensive. You can't just buy a $100 I bond, I don't believe.
Yeah, Mark.
I think you buy them at, like, let's say a $100 bond, buy them at $50. Right?
Exactly.
Yep, that's basically how it worked, but it's no longer guaranteed to be $100 at the end of a period of time. It's now based on a floating interest rate of 85% of the 5-year treasury rate.
Oh, I see. That's right.
But you always have to hold it 5 years if you don't want to get a penalty. There's a little penalty for the first 5 years if anybody tried to cash it in.
Right.
All right?
Okay.
All right, Dave. Good question.
Good luck.
And Charlotte is telling us some fascinating information. Charlotte, what can we do for you?
Oh, I'm just calling to tell you there's a place in Maryland called Timbuktu. It's a restaurant. Hanover, Maryland.
In Hanover, Maryland. Is that Hanover, Maryland? Where is that? That's
not near the airport, right?
Is that
near the airport, yes.
Yep. Not near the airport. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So is it a good restaurant, Dell?
I haven't been there, but one of my friends says it's the best place you've ever eaten. And I'm going to go there one day because I've always wanted to go to Timbuktu.
There you go. And everybody will be able to say that, you know?
I know.
I've been to Timbuktu.
All right. Well, we appreciate that information.
Thanks, Charlotte.
Anything else we can do for you, or is that it?
No, that's all for right now, but I'll call again sometime because I love your show.
All right. Well, you take
thank
care.
You.
We thank you for that. All right. She's from Lineboro. Lineboro, isn't that up Route 30?
PA, right?
Yeah, it's up in that direction.
Yeah.
Is it all the way in PA?
Yeah, it's right up there, right near the
she
line.
She may have to call back and tell us where the heck Lineboro is.
It's right near the
is.
Line, Drew. I think it's on our way to trip to Gettysburg. We probably pass it maybe or something.
And, I hear Hanover. I always think Hancock for some reason.
Yep.
Or, you think Hanover, Pennsylvania.
Right.
But that area, Hanover, is considered by the airport, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So
yeah, Hanover, Maryland. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we have about a minute and a half left to go. So I don't know what you want to talk about.
Well, I think your point was relatively earlier.
I say Charlotte's going to call back and tell us where Lineboro is. Charlotte, where's Lineboro?
It's right on the Mason-Dixon line. I live in Lineboro. It's east of Manchester, west of 83.
There you go.
Okay. There you go. Well, we appreciate that.
Thank you.
Yeah, Mason-Dixon line is our border of our property, one side.
Oh, wow. Hopefully you're on the other side of the Mason-Dixon line.
The north side.
I'm on the Maryland side.
Well. We'll pray for you, Charlotte. Take care. All right. So anyway, we got less than a minute to go now, Thomas. We just did a financial pulse.
We did.
Anybody who wants to join our Twitter, you can follow us at the FinCon.
At the FinCon is their Twitter handle, and our financial pulse is a video
and
newsletter.
If you go onto our website, you can sign up. There's a little thing up at the top says email sign in, and you can get signed into our financial pulse and our newsletters and articles that go out from us and so forth.
Yep.
And normally when we do our financial pulse, we do a little bit of talk about what we think's happening in the markets, and then we do a couple financial topics, and then maybe if there's anything specific happening in the company and so forth.
That's right.
So if you want to get that, you can just go on and sign up for that, or you can follow us at the FinCon.
At the FinCon.
At the FinCon. So next week we're talking estate planning, right? We're gonna be reviewing a book about estate planning basics and so forth, and she covers all the topics that everyone should know about in estate planning. So anyway, I think it'll be a good show next week.
Yep.
We're pretty much out of time.
I think
so
we are. There's
now
the music.
It is time to say goodbye, Thomas.
All
and
right.
This is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless. Radio 680 W.